Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. It's great to have you with us. We come your way every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we link to our guests. We'll be giving you the link to our guests' website here shortly. And we encourage you to check out the information. As we've always said, it's important for you to see if anything resonates with you. And indeed, if it does, please follow up on it. I think that you'll be very excited by some of the things that you find out. And we get excited about things that we find out as well. Our guests are a font of information and wisdom and insight, inspiration, and education, if you will. A lot of those different things. So please check all of that good stuff out. Today's program is going to delve into the subject. Well, I was going to say of money, but it's more than that. And what I like about this subject, as well as our guest, is the fact that for the first time in my lifetime, we're going to be talking about a subject I have kind of irritated me for decades. It's kind of weird to say because I remember not being able to say that when I was in my teens or 20s because I hadn't been around that many decades. It's the subject of the economy, of economics. And my argument these days to those who are all bent out of shape over the numbers, whether they be good or bad, or whatever the numbers are that they're talking about, is who said that this is the only economic system there is on the planet? And what it basically said to me was that nobody has the insight, the wherewithal to come up with a better, more equitable, I think that's probably the right term, economic system. Well, I think maybe we've found someone who at least has come up with an idea, and we're going to talk with this gentleman. He's the author of a lot of different books, but this one in particular, Quantum Economics, Unleashing the Power of an Economics of Consciousness. Oh my God. Can you believe that? That businesses and corporations and governments and anybody dealing with the economic system, which would be everybody, would be dealing in an economics of consciousness? Amit Goswami, PhD, he's a physicist, is going to be talking with us. Welcome to our program today.
Oh, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
This is a great joy for me because I've always wanted to find somebody who is thinking outside the box a little bit, who has decided that, you know, it is possible to come up with something different and something that I guess is more equitable, if that's the right term.
Well, I would put it more than possible. I would say it's imperative.
I would agree. We've got to come up with something new. And I have to say, too, that I don't know if you listen to the economic news much, but I'm always so frustrated, not by the numbers that are reported, whether they be true or not, or spun or not, or run through a meat grinder or not. My frustration is with those who react to those numbers, the economists and the government pundits and this and that and the other. And my question has always been to them over the last 15 or 20 years, you're not happy with the numbers that are out there. Okay, I get that. What numbers would make you happy? I never get an answer.
No, because there isn't any answer. The point is that the economists really do not know what the numbers as a whole mean. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, a 4% growth rate for America, it now would be better than the 2% or less growth rate that we have. But the point is that we don't really know how a 4% growth rate can be attained, or if it would even be the end of the road. I mean, we really don't know how that would be like. And these are the problems that we have. We don't know how to grow the economy, nor do we know where then that growth, what consequences does that growth lead to, and can that growth be sustained? Obviously, everybody would agree that a 4% growth rate is not even sustainable. So, you know, what's the point of aiming for such things or talking about such things except to make political points?
Well, here's what I found so frustrating back in 2008, 2009, which is the most recent economic upheaval, and in this case of a global nature, but of course here in the U.S., was that they were going to be using solutions, methods of trying to fix the problem that they've always used, they've used before time and time again. And yet they were also saying about this particular situation, all of the economic pundits were saying, we've never been down this road before. We've never experienced anything quite like this, not even the Great Depression. And they went on and on and on and on. And I'm going, and you're going to use the same solutions? I believe they call that insanity, don't they?
Yes, but they don't have anything else. The problem is that so long as the worldview is what we have, scientific materialism, you cannot really find any alternative to capitalism as it stands. Capitalism as modified by scientific materialism, it's worse, because the original idea, as I have shown in the book, of capitalism is actually pretty different than materialism indicates. But scientific materialism had put such spins on economics and make it so, in some ways, quantitative mathematical, which it isn't and cannot be, that it gives the false impression that everything is under control. But it isn't, because mathematics does not apply to economics in a fundamental way. So the whole track is wrong. That's the problem.
Let me ask you then, in that regard, as far as trying to come up with a new paradigm, because that's what we're all about here on Tell Me Your Story: new paradigms for a new world. We have this lifeboat, Amit, that it'll hold 7 billion people. It's a big lifeboat.
Big one.
But there's a catch. You don't need a ticket. What you do need is the willingness to let go of the old ways of doing things, because we're not taking them with us. They don't work anymore. Now, I'm curious as to the current economic paradigm. How, from your knowledge, how old is it? How long have we been working with this particular paradigm? I mean, hundreds, thousands, millennia?
No, not really. This paradigm, this capitalism paradigm, it has been around only since the 18th century. Adam Smith was the founder of it. Before then, there was an economy which could be called feudal economy. Adam Smith called it mercantile economy, because that's how it was in England, at least. The mercantile stuff pretty much dominated the feudalistic economy. But make no mistake about it, the idea was that there is an elite group and then there are serfs, barons and serfs. That's the way the economy was. Capitalism changed everything because it introduced the concept of middle class, and that's where the economic movement will take place. The producers will produce and the consumers will consume. There will be a match between gift and need, and the idea was that you just leave the market alone. The invisible hands of the market will take care of stability of prices, allocation of resources, and all that. So this simple idea, really, when it laid down to it, it's very simple. You just be guided by individual incentive, selfishness of the consumer and the selfishness of the producer. And the invisible hands of the market will match the two into a workable economy. And this simple idea has worked amazingly for these 300 or so years. So that is really a fantastic story. But now, why is it failing? That's the first question you ask. The first reason that it is failing is that we have never been able to take care of the shortcomings or look at why the shortcomings took place. There was always a shortcoming from the beginning, which suggests that the economics has some fundamental flaw. And the shortcoming was this so-called business cycle, boom and bust. We have periodic recession. The Great Recession was just a big example of it. But we always had recession from the inception of capitalism. Never have been a period in which there was no recession for a prolonged period of time. There has always been recession followed by inflation, bust and boom, boom and bust. So, and how to solve this problem, economists have never come up with any tangible idea for that. For the first time, this new economics, based on the quantum worldview, is giving us a solution. The reason is that the needs that we have, human beings have, compared to machines, are more than material needs. So when we put in our higher needs, needs for satisfying our feeling, needs for satisfying our need for meaning, needs even for spiritual values, if those needs are put into the economic equation, I have been able to show that then you can really achieve a steady state economics without this bust and boom kind of situation that arises with capitalism.
Well, there are two elements of the present system that have befuddled me, and I'm not alone, I'm sure. One of them has to do with, these are a couple of very simple examples of credit and debt. Now, I remember as a kid growing up, I kept hearing debt is good. You know, when they talked about the national debt and so forth, you got to have some debt. And I'm going, really? I don't understand that. It's like carrying rocks around. Do you really want to carry those rocks around? But the thing that I find so frustrating about our economic system is the fact that it is so complicated. For example, when I talk about credit, and let's just say a credit card, you have two different interest rates that are listed. And I'm not talking about the low one where if you keep your balance and you keep making your payments, and then if you don't, it goes way up. Right. They talk about here is your interest rate and then here's your APR. And I'm going, wait a minute, I don't understand. How are you charging me two different interest rates here? That to me has always been frustrating. And then the other element of it that I theorized this, and this goes back to what you said earlier about how the present capitalist system or economic model or paradigm is not sustainable. I started taking a look at wages, and this has nothing to do with the minimum wage argument. You go to work for a company, and of course, back when I was growing up, everybody was staying in a job for a long time. My first radio job, I was at for 15 years, unheard of in this business, but that's where I was. And you stay at a job for a long period of time, as most people did in the teens, 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, and so forth. And as you are there, you hope that you will get an increase in your wages. And if you do, well, the company has to compensate somehow for that in their profit loss margin, I think. And so what has to happen is, well, guess what? Your price of product or service must increase to compensate so that the employer can pay you that higher wage. And then you stay there even longer. Maybe you get every 2 years, you get a raise. Well, guess what? Product service price goes up every 2 years. And this keeps happening. Mm-hmm. And even if you move from one job to another and it's a lateral economic move, a financial move, you still hope that as you're at this place for 3 or 4 or 5 years that you increase your income. But as I began to think about this, I'm going, that's not sustainable because, you know, people are griping about the minimum wage now. People are griping about making $20 or $30 an hour and it's still not enough. This thing just goes on and on. It's like, this isn't going to end well.
Well, it requires infinite growth. You are completely right. And this infinite growth model of economy is a problem for capitalism, but only so long as we keep to finite resources. The reason that it scares us, and you were completely right, it's not sustainable, is that we only think of material resources. But we have other resources, and this is the kind of thing that we have ignored so far. But quantum worldview is enabling us to consider non-material resources for the first time in human history as a scientific matter. We now have verifiable non-material resources, the existence of which have been both theoretically predicted and verified and used practically. Medical people are using it already. So we have this absolute infinite resources available. We can put in those infinite resources into the economic equation. That's the challenge, mind you. And that's what quantum economics tells us as the remedy for everything. Then there is no sustainability problem because you can always draw on these resources and expand in those directions. So, for example, let me give you an exact example. Suppose you, yes, you expect a race, material race. But instead, I tell you that, look, Richard, I cannot give you a material raise, but you are doing very good work. How about if I give you more time off? Well, that doesn't sound too exciting. You don't know what to do with vacation anymore. Americans don't enjoy vacation. So you say, no, vacation I don't take. Then you, then he says, well, but I will give you free for you 10 hours of yoga or tai chi or this spirit raising exercises free for you. The master will come and teach you. Now, this time, if you know about these things, then you know, oh, those things are great because they cost a lot, but I'm getting it for free as a fringe benefit instead of a raise. So I'll take that. This sounds good. And then you start taking it, and then you find that really are good. They're fantastic. You didn't expect them to be as good as before. And you are happier because you are doing them. Your mind is quieter, and basically you are more satisfied, even without the material raise that you had. You see how the need actually was in your higher need, because you already have enough money to get by. The material raise that you wanted is only to satisfy your ego, that others are getting it, I should get it, because what I'll do now is to show that I'm working hard, I should get reward. All that is satisfied. Yes, I am being rewarded, but I'm being paid for in alternative means, which satisfies me much more than a token raise in the material domain.
I like that too, by the way. I think that would be a great compensation package in that respect, as far as the alternative or hope, you know, to that. And I also have to say too that as I have now, the radio station that I worked for 15 years, I started out at minimum wage in 1981. 81's minimum wage at that time was $3, folks, $3.65 an hour. That was a minimum wage in 1981. That's what I was making. 15 years later, Amit, I was making a whopping $7.35 an hour. Barely doubled in 15 years. Now, here's the interesting aspect and perspective that I took. And this ties into what you just talked about. All right, it would have been great. I could have gone down the same mindset as a lot of my employees, the people that I managed, who griped and moaned and groaned about how, oh, you want me to clean the bathroom? You guys don't pay me enough to clean the bathroom. And of course, I was cleaning the bathroom. I was also doing interviews, and just like this. And of course, I would receive the books and or the CDs. And of course, I would make the contacts and I would do the interview and I would get to know the guest and the guest would get to know me and so forth. And I began using that as the offset or the compensation. I believe from a spiritual level, metaphysical perspective, that there is always an exchange, but it doesn't necessarily come from where you might expect it. Mm-hmm. Just because you're working for that employer and you're giving your all, and I believe we all should be regardless, I do not agree with the law of diminishing returns, you're going to get, there's going to be an exchange and you will get compensated by the universe, but not necessarily from the employer in your paycheck.
Yes, that's the spiritual point of view. But what I'm saying is that we can even formalize that spiritual point of view of bringing into practicality, mm-hmm. into a codified new economics, and this will be better for everybody. This is what we really want, because we want satisfaction, we want happiness. We cannot buy those things in the market, and this is why we think that if we get more money, perhaps other things will make up for it. I'm unhappy, I go buy shoes, that gives a temporary high, and I feel good. And I think I mistake it as the reappearance of happiness in my life. But actually, if I could buy things that would give me real happiness, like vitality and mental meaning, then I have found a different way of rewarding myself and more permanent way. And the society as a whole would be more happy and more mentally satisfied than we see today.
Using the example of the folks on Wall Street down in what they call the pit, who are buying, selling, and trading commodities or whatever. I don't know what it is they're doing. It kind of looks like an out-of-sync mime group, but that's a whole nother thing. But their mindset is just that. It's about more, 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 and it's in more of the material aspect. But you're talking here as far as the whole aspect of quantum economics of quite well, literally, there is a very real spiritual component in your economic model. I'm correct about that, am I not?
Absolutely. There is a spiritual component, and make no mistake about it, the basic difference between quantum worldview and the Newtonian worldview is the spiritual component. Quantum worldview says that spirit is the fundamental building block, so to speak. It's not a building block, it's really the whole. But the consciousness is the ground of our being. And that consciousness is spiritual in the sense that it's non-local. We are connected by it. That is the oneness within us that mystics talk about. So quantum worldview just gives us unambiguously and verified with experimental data that we really have the spiritual oneness in spite of the separateness that we also have that Adam Smith's capitalism emphasized. But if we put in the quantum worldview, not only can we take care of the individual good that the capitalistic economics accomplishes, but also something that we always covet but never could quite understand how to do it, we could also introduce social good into the economic equation. So this is a tremendous, tremendous change from the usual way of doing economics. Because, you know, individual selfishness will always conflict with somebody else's individual selfishness. There is just no way of doing it. Today, it shows up in global climate change. That's the problem that we are all concerned about because it's affecting us most directly compared to any other problem. But why global warming? Because companies pollute. But can companies remember that it is not for the greater good? No, there is nothing in the economic equation in the present time that forces companies to remember that you cannot do anything that is against the greater good. In the new economics, that realization that you are part of the greater good as well is built into it. And therefore, companies cannot afford to remember. Government cannot afford to remember, afford not to remember. So everybody has to remember that greater good is part of the economic equation. Otherwise, the economics don't work. In other words, what Adam Smith called invisible hands of the market, we now have identified with the help of the quantum worldview, are the hands of consciousness itself. It's consciousness which guides us, and if we don't follow the guidance of consciousness, namely there are these broad guidelines of ethics and greater good, if we don't take that into account, we get into recessions and great recessions and depressions is just one example of that. But we get in trouble. If we are in consonance with the movement of consciousness, then everything works smoothly, just as Adam Smith predicted. So yes, individual selfishness, it should be the driving force. It's certainly not socialism, not Marxism, that's more desirable. But we always have to remember two things. One is ethics, that's the movement of consciousness once, and the other is creativity. That's the other requirement of the movement of consciousness.
I've often been thinking of late, and again, of late meaning the last 5 or 10 years, that our systems, if you will, our institutions should be serving all the people, not just a select few. And what we talk about on this program, as the example of the lifeboat, is that, you know, it's there for everybody. That doesn't mean you have to get on board. If you don't want to, you don't have to. We're moving on to something hopefully greater, and maybe you'll see the wisdom in that. And again, I don't have all the answers. That's why I have you here, because you have some of the answers. What's that?
I have some of the answers. I was going to say I don't have all the answers either. That's too much. But I have some of the answers.
But we're trying. We're giving it our best shot. We're trying to open up our minds, our hearts, our souls, if you will, to consider all kinds of different possibilities. I often use the analogy as we talk about giving people choices and knowledge of those choices. You're walking down a foggy road that you walk down every day, and you're told by, you know, your tribe or your community, stay to the right and follow that white line that you can see about 10 feet in front of you, and you'll get to the destination, and then follow it back and everything will be fine. One day the fog lifts and you notice there's a fork in the road. Ooh, I could go off on that other fork. I never knew it was even there. Well, there are choices that we don't even know we don't know. And that's what we're trying to bring to the public. And I'm curious, seeing as that you are also a theoretical quantum physicist, what is the relationship, the correlation, if you will, between quantum physics and I'm going to keep it at this level, and economics that gave you the impetus to come up with quantum economics?
Yes, this is the most vital question, and indeed, and this was very important when I started. The whole thing started at a conference with the Dalai Lama, where Dalai Lama was asking us, the assembled scientists, what is the use for all these new paradigms that you were researching and exploring? And we had to come up with it. Until then, the interest was just to see whether quantum physics leads to a new paradigm for me. And it does. Quantum physics says that consciousness is the ground of all being rather than matter. So that's a tremendous shift, scientifically speaking, of how we view the world. The world is made of consciousness. I mean, that's fantastic. Well, the world does not exist without our consciousness being involved in it. All fantastic, but it's all very theoretical. Dalai Lama is asking a very practical question. How do you apply this concept to practical problems? So that's how quantum economics eventually came about. How do you apply a science of consciousness, where consciousness is basic? So what happens to economics? Specifically, I ask myself, what happens to capitalism? What is lacking? Well, capitalism starts with individual selfishness, individual interest, and that has been great to some extent, as far as it can go. Everybody has noticed that it does not have the idea of social good. Keynes corrected it through government intervention. Some people like it, some people don't. You call them Republicans and Democrats. But okay, that's another story. But still, government intervention violates the spirit of capitalism, is true. Government intervention is needed in this system, because otherwise, how do you introduce social good at all? Because otherwise, look at the misery that people would suffer during the time of recession. No jobs, economy slows down, nobody can buy anything, sell anything. It's horrible. So, but either one does not seem to be the right thing to do. It's a patch-up. And really, either solution could be okay for a while, but neither solution is perfect, obviously. So what happens when you look at from the point of view of consciousness? This is the question that I asked. And as soon as you ask that, you realize consciousness has experiences, and conscious experiences are not restricted to material experiences. In fact, it is a fact that in the 60s, Abraham Maslow, a psychologist, wrote a very important paper pointing out that there is a hierarchy of needs. So when Adam Smith talked about matching needs and gifts, consumption and production, he was only putting in part of those needs, material needs. But Maslow said we have higher needs. What kind of higher needs? Well, needs for vitality, needs for meaning, needs for spiritual values in our life. No human being is complete without satisfying these other needs. As soon as our material needs are satisfied, we look for our meaning needs, our vitality needs, our spiritual needs. And this is what Adam Smith was missing. Quantum physics gives us a worldview which enables us to include these experiences, these as non-physical as they may be. And it so happens that the advancement of technology and the nature of our physical body, we have not only a biochemical body, but also a bioelectric body. And this bioelectric body enables us to measure these subtle energies, so to speak. So not only do we have a theory to put that back in science and economics, but also we have measurement problems solved too. We can measure these energies. They're non-physical, but we can measure it by physical means because they're correlated with electrical body, and those electrical body changes can be measured by electrical instruments, as simple as that. So now we have the problem solved. They are quantifiable, and therefore the fundamental reservation that we always had about non-material stuff, assuming non-material stuff complements the material stuff in the world. The problem is quantification. How do you quantify non-material? We can now quantify these non-material aspects of our needs. And so if you can quantify, you can make economics too. Economics is management, management of where we live. The word oikos is a Greek word, oikos. That's what the origin of the word. Oikos means the place we live. Where do we live? We live in our psyche much more than we live in the physical world, right? So the psyche, the needs of the psyche has to be taken care of, has to be managed. And now that we can measure the experiences of the psyche, namely vitality, meaning, and values, we can make them part of the economic equation. And that's what quantum economics does.
Well, it just seems to me like a simple solution. But when we come back from break, I want to have you discuss for our listeners, or open the door for them as to how we are going to bridge from the old to the new. We can't just tear down the old and then start constructing the new, because we have to have something in the interim, or at least that's what we're told in any of the institutions that we currently see. And in this case, we're talking about something that is of a global nature. When we come back, and we're talking with our special guest here on the program, he is, by the way, he is not only a theoretical quantum physicist, he also served as the professor at the University of Oregon's Department of Physics. He is currently retired, but this was from 1968 to 1997, currently a pioneer of the new paradigm of science called, I love this, I love the way this is phrased, science within consciousness. As an idea, he explicates. I love new words. I've never heard that word before, explicate. But in the context of what you've written, what's been written here, I understand it. And he also talks about all of this in his book, The Self-Aware Universe, where he also solves the quantum measurements problem, elucidating the famous observer effect. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. And as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Quantum economics, unleashing the power of an economics of consciousness. Amit Goswami, PhD, is my guest. He's also the author of Quantum Creativity, I guess you are certainly welcome to use the word quantum in front of whatever that you wish, because you're a theoretical quantum physicist. I still struggle with the aspect. I thought that physics was enough, and then there came quantum physics, and it's like, and how is that different from regular physics, or why wasn't it just folded into and made part of the overall physics? I've never quite understood how is physics and quantum physics, how do they differ?
Well, they differ in a very fundamental way. Quantum physics really has changed our way of thinking about objects. In ordinary physics, objects are assumed to be things, and they respond to things like forces. So how you change the position of an object, you apply a force to it. You know, this is just well known. That's how Newton's laws operate. So in quantum physics, it changes. Objects and forces are still there, but the objects are now waves of possibility. They're not things. They're not things that we see, that we touch. They're not things like that. They're waves of possibility. They're only possible things. So forces act on them. Yes, they can change, but as possibility.
Okay, I don't mean to interrupt you, but if that's the case, then why not just modify physics? Why create another branch?
Well, because this physics then requires a fundamental modification, because how does the possibility become actualities of this world? These possibilities roam about in a world that we call world of potentiality. But how do then these possibilities become actualities in this world? So that becomes a whole new set of equations, new set of ways of working that wasn't before. And this is the reason we call it quantum physics, because it's so fundamentally different. It's a physics that we have to operate in the realm of potentiality, and then experiments brings us to this realm of actuality. That connection we have to understand, and this requires a whole new worldview. Because if you look at the previous worldview, the fundamental reason that Newton was so popular and so successful in a hurry was that science was predictive, completely predictive. This new science, complete predictivity is gone. It's based on uncertainty. Instead of determinism, we now have uncertainty. We cannot know the world completely. So we have to deal with it. How do we deal with it? Well, first of all, it's not all bad, because for large numbers, this physics, which is a probabilistic physics, works out very well. Possibilities are possibilities, cannot be completely ascertained, but their probabilities are pretty good predictions if we deal with large number of objects. So physics and chemistry, the world of inanimate objects are okay, because they're, you know, a macro object is made of huge number of elementary particles. That's where we apply quantum physics. And so it works out. Probability calculations work. But the problem is, when we try to apply this same physics to individual objects, like we need to for living systems, that's when hell breaks loose. Because how do we handle the behavior of single objects or single events? Mm-hmm. Then probabilities don't apply. So that's when the quantum worldview, the power of the quantum worldview has to come in. We have to introduce consciousness. We have to say, well, for individual events and individual objects, consciousness is important. Consciousness chooses, and we have to include choice. And that's how creativity is back into the game, not determinism alone. So creativity and determinism, and we have to balance our life between them. Right now, the materialist way of handling economics doesn't work, because we determine, we depend too much on the deterministic aspect of science. We have ignored creativity almost completely. Businesses are not creative anymore. No business innovation, somebody said, since the 1950s, which is really has a lot of truth in it. I mean, of course, we have cell phone, but the idea is as old as the 1950s. So what to do? Bring in creativity is easy to talk about, but it's not easy to do when you don't have a model for creative process. And scientific materialism has to deny this, because according to Newton, everything is deterministic. Quantum physics can include creativity, because everything is uncertain from the beginning. And therefore, the question is not why creativity, the question is why determinism. And of course, we can answer both questions. Determinism is because we condition ourselves. We become conditioned. That's why determinism. But naturally, a human being is creative. That's the difference of a human being and a machine. So we naturally put in creativity, naturally put in things like ethics, which is a requirement of consciousness, in the economic equation. And that makes a huge difference.
I guess the extremely simplistic way of codifying all of that down is that on one hand, everything is matter, it's physical, it's hard, it's we can feel it, touch it, taste it, hear it, smell it, etc. And yet, on the other hand, everything is energy. Everything is, and I don't care what you name, it's energy.
Yes, and think of the energy as possible energy, not even energy that is measurable and determined, but energy potentiality, potentiality of energy. So this is the view that if you can bring in on a massive scale, and you're helping Richard already, this hour with people talking about quantum worldview is very purifying. It's very purifying, and it can purify us of the huge amount of miasma that scientific materialism has created in our minds.
Well, this to me, it's exciting because the possibilities are literally endless. Just because we're told by certain groups of people, by certain institutions that, you know, this is the way it is. I mean, when I was growing up in this business, I was working for a Christian radio station back in Phoenix. And of course, I was always told that there was only one path. There was only one way on a spiritual level. And I began to kind of break down human existence to the basic levels of, all right, well, I can eat a myriad of different things and stay and they be nutritious and good for me. They may also taste good. They'd be fun to eat and so forth. And I can watch all kinds of programs. I can read all kinds of books. When they talk about education, I can go and educate myself in any field that I want. I can travel and go anywhere on the globe that I wish to. I can join whatever political party that I want, have pretty much any mindset that I want. But when it came to spirituality, there's only one way. And I'm going, wait a minute, that doesn't make any logical sense.
Correct.
And that's basically kind of where I come from these days is that, I'm not saying that everything has to. I was even told that, you need to give up the need to know why because, you're never going to get all the answers that you want. But by the same token, unfortunately, I think a lot of people have given up the process of logical thinking, of problem solving, of in a creative way, not using the same things. I remember taking there was a puzzle book that I remember buying once, and it had two different puzzles. One was an alpha, and the other one was a numeric puzzle. And the alpha puzzle, the puzzle was a very simple one. It had, I think, six different letters in the alphabet. And I think you could say A and B and E and O and Z and Q, for example. Okay, what's the pattern? Well, I figured out what the pattern was. The even-numbered positions were curved lines, and the odd-numbered positions were straight-lined alpha characters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I went on to the numeric puzzle. Had six numbers in a row, and it had, for example, 1 and 3 and 7 and 6 and 4 and 9, and said, okay, what's the pattern? I couldn't figure it out. It was the same answer as the previous puzzle. Now, that's sort of a reverse of what I'm saying, but the thing is that we tend to want to use the same solutions over and over again. All right, that's fine. If the problem is different, we need to come up with different solutions. What is the bridge in your estimation, Amit? What is the bridge between the present economic system and paradigm and your quantum economics paradigm?
Okay, so the bridge is to, we have become used to this situation where there is hardly any new innovation. So what we need is an extension of the current economic situation, because we are running out of material resources, and we also know that material resources pollute. We cannot just go on deploying them on and on to expand our economy. We also have established that we need expansion, otherwise economics cannot be done. So how do you get expansion? Material domain is a finite domain, so we have to have infinite domains of expansion. These non-material domains, which I call subtle energies, vitality, meaning, and spiritual values, can give us that. This is the first thing to notice. The second thing to notice is that the new worldview tells us that there is absolute guarantee that anybody can be creative in the new worldview, not just a few geniuses. Anybody can be creative. We have unlocked the creative process. So if anybody can be creative, and suppose they all start acting creatively in this new domain, will technology be far behind? No, just as in the 18th century, we have a plethora of material technology opening up because you understood the science of technology. Similarly, today we understand the science of vital energy technology, meaning technology, and even spiritual values. We understand the basic mechanism. So the gift of production is already there. All we have to do is to make people aware that, look, you can now satisfy your needs that you have never been able to satisfy. People have do not know that yet. I mean, they have the needs. Everybody has needs for vitality, needs to feel, needs to feel good, needs to feel energized. Everybody has the need for meaning. It's showing up a little by little when people ask for meaningful jobs. And today, notice that what is happening. The routine jobs are being taken over by machines. Robots are replacing human labor. This is really the culprit of why routine jobs are disappearing. It's not our trade deals alone. Okay, sure, trade deals affect a few people and the jobs shift overseas. But that's only a small part of the reason. Eventually, all routine jobs will disappear from America and developed countries like this because people don't need to do them. Machines can do them. So what do people do? Well, people satisfy and produce these needs of vitality, needs of meaning, and needs of spiritual values. So people have to start realizing that they have the right to change from the dull drudgery of material labor in that sector. You know, it is a fact that it's dull. We have been doing it since the days of ancient days of barons and serfs, but it's dull, it's boring. And now machines can do it. So let's get into the next phase of human civilization where human beings will be doing meaningful jobs, jobs that bring satisfaction. And this is the phase that we are ready for with our new science. Because what happens then is that vital energy technologies build up. Now, what is an example of vital energy technology? Acupuncture, which everybody knows. You put a needle in somebody's arm and his or her headache is gone. What is the magic of it? Well, magic is vital energy. Magic is that the body can do creative adjustments in your vital body, which is also responsible for your health. So in this way, we already know that this works for keeping us healthy. This works for healing us. And so why not acknowledge that vitality can be very useful in other situations as well? I'll give you an example. We diet a lot. But we diet, we lose weight, and then we stop dieting and immediately we gain back the weight. Why? Because dissatisfaction builds up during the dieting period. We are never satisfied, but we don't ask the question, why aren't we satisfied? We are getting the supplements, the body is getting all the needs, material needs. What is it missing? Well, according to the new science, it misses vitality. So if we use vitalized diet supplements, and then these cravings would not arise after we stop dieting. So enormous number of people can be helped. You know, America is an obese country. Let's face up with the fact. This problem of obesity will be gone because people can diet and they can get vitalized diet supplements during their dieting and they won't have the craving that comes back after the dieting, after they lose the weight and they gain it back again. That won't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of solution that we're looking for. It's the vital energy is quantifiable. It can be measured. Vital energy, we can put a price tag on it. Okay, this is the amount of vital energy I have sold you. This is the price you pay, and you're going to get this benefit. We can measure it. We measure your vital energy signatures before you start the treatment and after you start the treatment. And there will be a difference. Your vitality after you finished up with your diet routine is enormously different than it would have been if you starved yourself under ordinary diet routine.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, the way you describe all of this in terms of a new paradigm and how we struggle as human beings to face the challenge of incorporating these new paradigms into our lives in whatever capacity that would be. And a case in point is that for a long time, there was no such thing as a vegetarian who didn't eat meat or poultry or fish. And of course, the belief was that, you know, these animals, they have souls and we need to be stewards and of these, you know, people who are vegetarians. They don't consider them as resources. They're creatures who have lives of their own. Well, there's another paradigm that was sort of alluded to back, I think it was in the 1920s or 30s, by a scientist by the name of Jagadish Chandra Bose. And he created what is called, for folks who don't know, it's called a crescograph, which allowed you to magnify the shall we say, the vessels of a plant. And he was able to prove that plants felt, had feelings, and that they responded to emotional stimuli of all kinds. And the paradigm that I'm speaking of is like, okay, well, if animals have souls and they have feelings and so on and so forth, then Jagadish showed, Dr. Bose showed that so do plants. So now what are you going to eat? Now, I'm not advocating that we don't eat plants because now we have virtually nothing left to eat.
There is a finite difference, Richard, between animal and plant.
Oh, sure.
Help you rationalize this. Plants are multiple cells in such a way that plants really don't die. Plants live on in some very basic way. Plants can be said to be immortal because the same plant in some ways lives on and on. Mm-hmm. Whereas an animal has the individuality to the extent that that particular animal differentiated in that particular way really does die. Mm-hmm. So in that way, we really don't commit murder if we are taking food from a plant because we are not killing it.
Right, right.
For the animal, we really commit murder because without killing it, we cannot eat it. And that's not fair either. So without hurting it, we cannot eat it. Whereas for a plant, we can eat it without hurting it. I mean, hurting it a little bit maybe, but not so much because it will grow back again.
And there are those who are advocating, such as folks like Temple Grandin, a more humane, if we're going to eat livestock, if we're going to eat animals, we need to do it in a very humane way.
We need to grow the animals in a more humane way, and we should eat them like the tribal people used to eat them, with ritualistic respect.
Yes.
Animal and all this.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a little bit about how you came to this place. What kind of what path in your youth did you follow that led you through physics and into quantum economics?
I must confess, Richard, I did not have any really very different upbringing in terms of, different upbringing when I was a child because, there was some spiritual guidance. But I gave up all that. Materialism interested me and science seemed very, very appropriate for a young man to go ahead instead of the uncertainties of the spiritual traditions, just as you faced it. I faced a similar question in terms of what's the use of these rituals because you don't see any effect immediately. Science gave me a promise that, okay, you do something and you see the effect immediately, and that's great. So I took that path very seriously. But when I was approaching midlife, then I had an experience which suggested to me very clearly that I'm not happy living this unintegrated way of life that we live. Unintegrated because I was doing physics at the university and teaching and researching and all this that occupied much of my time, but that had nothing to do with living, how I live, my challenges with how to love my wife, how to love my children. These challenges had nothing to do with nuclear physics or quantum physics or any of these things that it, what, in the way that I was doing it then. So I was determined to find meaning in my professional life. And that meaningful job, looking for a meaningful job, things that you do that satisfies you. The Thai word for this kind of thing is a word which says you should do only that thing that satisfies you. I just started looking for how can I do science that will satisfy me, that will give me meaning. And that led me to solution of the quantum philosophy problem that has puzzled everybody else, and I found that the solution is really a spiritual solution. So the way I was growing up finally was integrated with the way I was trained to make my living. So my living and life became finally integrated.
Well, and that's one of the things that's being taught and has been taught, you know, for many, many years, hundreds or thousands of years, that there is no separation, that it's all integrated. I remember, I think it was Teresa of Avila or maybe it was Teresa Neumann who made the comment that God is amongst the pots and the pans.
Yes, something similar. I remember reading that.
Yeah.
I said, God is in the details.
And God is in the details. Some will say the devil's in the details, but who made the devil? You go through that whole philosophical argument. But one of the things I think that really seems to be bringing people closer together is their understanding and their awareness of the necessity for community, which is a very real representation of the interconnectedness, not just of us as human beings, but of everything in the universe.
Right. And this is the fundamental problem of economics, as Barry Commoner and his associates recognized at one point. They put forward the idea that we have to integrate the homo economicus, the selfish economic being of Adam Smith's capitalism, with the idea of homo communis, that human beings are also part of a community. So in that way, we need to integrate this homo economicus, the selfish human being, with homo communis, but we didn't have the worldview for it, because the materialist science, that makes us into independent, separate objects. Quantum physics says that, yes, we are separate objects, but beyond the separateness, there is also unity. So quantum physics, quantum worldview fundamentally integrates that homo economicus with homo communis, and therein is the power of quantum economics. This is why I say unleashing the power of consciousness in economics. Once we bring consciousness back into economics, then there will be no more of this ballooning effect or this tremendous devastating effect that individual selfishness produces on businesses and economy goes down the drain for everyone. This will just not happen. These meltdowns will be a thing of the past. Even big recessions will be a thing of the past. If any, recessions will be very mild with the quantum economics. In fact, we can call quantum economics the first steady state economics that we have ever been able to build.
You know, this is a fascinating concept, and I certainly hope that it can be brought about. I remember a few years back having the privilege of interviewing a visionary civilization architect, if you will, by the name of Jacques Fresco out of Florida and the Venus Project. And of course, he shared his thoughts, his visions of the future. And he talked about a new economic system that was resource-based, no longer monetary-based. And the resources would belong to all the people. You'd still need, companies, if you will, entities to distribute it. But nobody would be left out in this instance. And I thought, what a great model. I'd love to get rid of money, which means you don't have credit or debt or any of those kinds of things. And you earn what you spend and vice versa. And you don't need to worry about travel because, there are going to be these high-speed tubes, if you will, or trains or whatever you want to call them, that'll get you from one place to another in no time flat, and on and on and on. And what a great idea. And of course, I'm looking and listening to what you're saying about quantum economics and thinking, gee, I wish we could bring this about today, but it takes time. And I think that's one of the other aspects of this too, Amit, is that we have to, in addition to moving forward, we also have to have patience, don't we?
We have to have patience because we know how to deploy vital energy, mental meaning, and spiritual values in a small scale. We have to learn to deploy it in large scale. This is the big challenge. But we are going ahead, and researchers are already figuring out ways of deploying some of the concepts. For example, I gave you the idea of the diet food. Can we produce such diet food on a bulk scale? Right now, we cannot. We can produce in small scales, we can do experiments in a small scale, and it works. But whether it will work for producing large-scale deployment, that is the big uncertainty. But you know what? Movement of consciousness. That is the invisible hands of the free market, and that is going in our favor. Because if you look at conscious evolution, you find one thing that will reassure you constantly. Whatever big change occurs in our society are movements of consciousness itself. That is intended. Consciousness movement has purpose. This purpose is to make our life better and better. As Teilhard de Chardin, a great spiritual scientist, used to say, eventually the idea is to idea of evolution is to create heaven on earth. So how could we fail? We could not fail because the needs are very clear. We need to recognize that people need meaningful jobs. We need to recognize that the material dimensions is finite and it is giving us finiteness problems all over, including pollution and running out of resources. So we have no alternative but to find solutions, and the solution is here, because at the same time a theory is coming along and the measurement has become possible. We never thought that we can ever measure non-physical things, but today we can. And this is just such enormous good news for people, you know, if you are into it, if you can comprehend that, yes, we have these non-physical things in our built-in into our body, and we just don't appreciate that they are non-physical because materialists have fed us a whole bunch of propaganda that mind is brain and all this. Yeah, they're nothing but empty propaganda because there's no proof of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mind is brain, you know, what? How they prove it? They say, well, we can measure brain phenomenon, you know, with MRI, and they change with mental change. But it's the opposite.
Well, I find it fascinating, too, as you share that. It makes me think of the concept, or the, I'm going to say, the theory of dark matter. Now, they say they can't see it, taste it, smell it, hear it. They can't measure it in any way, shape, or form, but they know that it is there. And I'm going, okay. And yet, science will also say that a person who has a near-death experience, that's just the random firings of the electrons in the brain and the synapses and so forth. And it's not some spiritual event. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways.
You cannot have it both ways. This double standard is what is killing science. But scientists are aware of it. So some scientists, to my great joy, are looking at these inconsistencies of the worldview of scientific materialism and are changing it. You know, paradigm is really shifting.
Yeah.
So that's the good news for people, that paradigm is shifting and quantum economics will replace Adam Smith's capitalism and or socialism of the other kind that people sometimes propose without understanding that it's just really a pipe dream. It won't happen that way because it can't. It's impossible to apply it in a large scale and still not be broke. Every government will go broke eventually if we have to do it socialistically by government intervention, because bureaucracy is just incapable of creativity. We cannot have creativity in that scale. Creativity is a very individual phenomenon. It has to stay individual. So individuality, as in Adam Smith capitalism, got to be part and parcel of our economic system. Capitalism basic idea is correct. You bring in individual incentive. How do people go from individual incentive to collectivity? By the simple awareness that as we consume these subtle goods, as you consume vital energy, mental meaning, and spiritual value, you change. You become aware that there is also the collective, there is also the unity consciousness, and you cannot act without paying attention to that unity with other people in your ventures anymore. And that's when society changes, that's when businesses change, that's when everybody becomes harmonious with everyone else. And that's social good.
I like also to talk a little bit about this Center for Quantum Activism. I find that fascinating. Tell us a little bit about that and your involvement.
Well, I have been doing this, you know, the discovery that came to me, the explanation of the observer effect, that observer changes things, that came in 1989. And then I had that conference with Dalai Lama, social change, so I started working with that. I already also had an interest in medical stuff, health. Chopra started with a book on quantum healing, but I took it much further in a book called Quantum Doctor. And so the idea naturally came that now that we have a worldview in place, and people are so very full of inertia that they're taking their good old time, you know, really 2 decades was long enough time for me to be patient. After that, I really saw that we need some activism. We need some active propounding of this new worldview because it's solving problems. It is already in place. It's solving problems. It's experimentally verified. What's keeping it from being deployed? It's just the inertia of people, inertia of old people to change. They don't want to adjust to a new system of thinking. Young people are different. Millennials, as you know, they're flocking to people who want change. Why is Barney so popular? Because people want change. They want meaning. And so I noticed that and said that, okay, let's give them meaning, but not in that political, temporary, once in every 4 year way, in a permanent way. How do we do it? We bring quantum worldview in people by people's demand. So I started working on increasing the demand from the grassroots. It's taking time, but I'll tell you, I started it movement formally in 2009. It has been 7 years, and we have huge developments. We have now, we train quantum activists in countries like here, America, in Brazil, in the Bahamas, in England, in Italy, in India, in Japan, in Spain. So even in the Middle East, we are starting to start quantum activism in the Middle East. Can you believe it? So it really is going places. Why? Because people want change. They recognize that change is in the air, change is needed, and they're welcoming it. Quantum activism is the idea to change ourselves and change society using the principles of quantum physics and quantum worldview.
You know, that whole concept of the observer effect, I remember hearing a story of some scientists, and this was a prime example of this, where they were conducting this experiment, and they conducted it a number of times, and they kept getting different results, which didn't make any sense to them. And sometimes there were situations where the constant was the experiment, but the non-constant were the scientists.
Yes.
Because they weren't always the same group each time. And even if they were, every scientist had in a different mood or mindset at that particular point in time.
What intention for this kind of situation?
Exactly. Yes. So intention. The implication, as I was told this story, the implication was so incredible, as you have already described, that they weren't even consciously trying to affect the experiment. They just were. Well, what happens if you focus your intention, your energy, if you will, on a particular intention? Gee, what could happen then?
Exactly. And that is the whole idea. This is the idea that will change the world. As you become aware of the fact that we have freedom to choose, we have the freedom to be creative, we can guide the movement of consciousness with our creative intentions, then we can change our society, we can change the world to the new, to the quantum worldview in no time. That's what the pledge of quantum activism is, precisely that, to use our intention to make changes in ourselves and in our society that will take the movement of consciousness forward in evolution, evolve more love, more beauty, more justice in our society.
Well, and that's certainly what we're looking for, in all of the different isms or institutions that are out there. The judicial system, I always thought, had to do with truth and justice. But today it's about winning and losing. In the educational system, it's about propaganda and that type of thing, rather than teaching people how to think.
And look at businesses. Businesses, economics really should be about abundance, not about just material money. It should be about abundance.
How much can you actually have? I mean, how much do you really need? I mean, 2 billion, 6 billion, 100, 3 trillion, et cetera, et cetera.
Material money, there's no limit.
Yeah.
But as soon as you think of abundance, what is abundance? When you have abundance, then you can give.
Yeah.
Then you don't need anymore. You become a giver instead of a needer. But if people's sense of abundance is not satisfied, you cannot give. This is why Donald Trump, you know, this kind of people, demagoguery is created because people are extremely unsatisfied with all the money they have amassed, but something is escaping them. They're not happy.
Yeah.
And this is why they behave the way they behave. This is the one thing that we can abolish if we brought the idea into economics that it is not material wealth that we are trying to create. It's wealth of abundance, wealth that includes material and non-material, namely vitality, meaning, and spiritual values. Once we put that in, then we have abundance. Then we can set up an economy which is giving economy. Then we don't bitch about jobs being lost to foreign countries. Who are foreigners? They are also us. We are connected. Mm-hmm. It's all one humanity.
You know, when we went through the downturn in 2008 here in this country, hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs. And the only thing I could really think of, I mean, my hearts went out to them thinking, oh, my gosh, how are they going to make it to, you know, how are they going to put food on the table, keep the house and so forth? But the one thing that went through my mind was, I wonder, I bet you that 99% of those people who lost their jobs due to the economic downturn hated their jobs. They only did it because it was a family business or because, well, my great-grandfather was this and my grandfather was this and my father was this, so this is what I am, and on down the line. And now they have the, and this is, of course, back in 2008, 2009, now they have the opportunity to go do something that they really love to do. And a matter of fact, there were reports coming out that now there were more people who were creating jobs of their own making.
And this is because the new economics is gradually, unobtrusively coming into force.
Yeah.
People are realizing that they can have meaningful jobs because meaning is important, because value is important, and therefore people can propound values and make a living just by propounding values. What we have to do is a major revision. You know, this kind of economics, the first thing that will happen is that the education, the way we give it now, will change. The spirituality, the way you give it now through churches, that will change. So fundamental changes are going to come, not only just the materialist part of the economy, which will be supplanted now gradually with the vital energy economy, as I have said, but also the how we sell meaning, you know, through higher education institutions, which don't sell meaning, actually, they pretend. And this pretension is what is creating the vacuum. But people are waking up to that. People are realizing that, no, they can themselves create jobs of meaning. They don't have to depend on these institutions. But we'll do better. We'll do better because we'll replace these higher education institutions with better institutions, which will replace these job-creating institutions that they have become by more liberal, meaningful education. That was the purpose of liberal education all along.
You know, I was going to ask you if you thought that this was going to manifest in your lifetime, but the reality is that it is in the process of manifesting now, as you've just described. So you don't have to. You don't have to wait.
I don't have to wait. No, I do have to wait for the large-scale deployment. You know, there was a huge change in the sense that, you know, we give Adam Smith all the credit. But the truth is that the capitalist economy was already gradually replacing the feudalistic mercantile economy of his time. What he did, his book was a catalyst. Now, similarly, if my book becomes a catalyst and that helps to propound the quantum economics sooner, I'll be very, very grateful. But you're right. I mean, I'm very happy whenever I see that, yes, alternative medicine is here to stay. People are getting into these non-physical energies and not batting an eyelash because all they care is they care much more about healing than listening to an empty worldview, empty and inconsistent worldview like scientific materialism. So people are not fools, and people never have been fools. And that is, of course, the safeguard that we all have. We are not machines. So there is nothing to worry. But of course, if it happened quickly, like you said, if it happened this moment, it would be a nice feeling. But you know, I was talking to another radio host just recently, and I was saying that, well, we may have to wait, we may have to be patient. And she said very calmly that, look, it's already happening. You're just not looking. The mainstream media is not aware of it, and they're never going to publicize it, but it's already in place. The new paradigm is already here.
Well,
and
I
that's
did,
true.
I did hear something in the news just the other day. There was a conference of oil producers, U.S. oil producers or corporations that were in a meeting, the seminar, whatever you and I wish I could remember the gentleman's name who made this comment. But basically, he said, in essence, your time is just about up because people are shifting to other forms of energy. And you're basically going to be a secondary or tertiary resource provider, you know, in the not too distant future, which certainly didn't sit real well with those folks. But and again, I don't want to start casting stones at them. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's time for us to, again, this is part of the shift. This is part of the change. Let me tell you that Quantum Economics is the title of the book. And I will tell you that the website, we told you we'd give you the website. It's AmitGoswami.org. That's A-M as in Mary, I-T-G-O-S-W-A-M as in Mary, I.org. We will be linked to it as well. So you go there, check it out. Consciousness does matter. That is what Amit Goswami has to say about that. He is a theoretical quantum physicist with his PhD as this website, and you can get all the great information that you want from the website. Pick up a copy of the book. Before I let you go, two things. Number one, is if you ever find yourself down here in the Santa Barbara area here in California, we would love to have you in studio to continue this incredible, life-changing conversation.
Wonderful. Very good.
And also, I have three final questions for you. Mm-hmm. The first one is, who is Amit Goswami?
Amit Goswami is a human being, and he is the he's a quantum activist, and he practices what he preaches. He lives by the quantum worldview. He has helped generate what the paradigm shift is on the basis of quantum physics, and he's very grateful for all the supports that he has gotten in the world for doing his work.
And to that end, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, I'm already, as I said, I'm already achieving it. What I hope to achieve is a more harmonious world where world peace is not just a phrase that people occasionally throw in, but a reality that we recognize all of us. We become completely individual in our creativity as well as completely grounded in our unity consciousness so that we can be ethical in our dealings with other human beings. You know, these are some of the dreams I dream for myself. And everybody has a sense of abundance. You know, I ended the economics book by saying that, American dream is not just an American dream. It's a dream for all inhabitants of the world, all humanity. And why can't we accomplish it? With quantum worldview in place to guide us, we can accomplish the American dream for everyone in the world. And that should be the objective of economics. And quantum economics will accomplish that in a matter of decades.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to spread unity all over the world. I am delighted that I started with an enormously unhappy day, which ended up in the thought that why do I live this way? That was the thought that occurred at the end of the day and suggested to me I don't have to live this way. I can integrate my life and making a living. And I did. I have. So I want everyone in the world to be similarly able to put all this conflict behind. Life can be lived in a harmonious way. There does not need to be a conflict between the way we make a living and the way we live. We can be harmonious. This is the message of quantum worldview, the single message that should prompt us to change our societies. Because right now the jobs are in such a way that they make it impossible to live in synchrony between life and living. we make a living, we get so tired, we flop before the TV in the evening. That is not permissible. As a human being living in America in the 21st century, that is just not permissible. We have to change. We have to do it differently. Quantum economics is showing us the way to do it differently. And please, you read this book and you judge for yourself. If it does not give you the hint of a new life ahead of us, then you write to me. We'll engage in a dialogue.
And you can do that by going to his website, amitgoswami.org. Again, that's A-M-I-T-G-O-S-W. AMI.org. And Dr. Goswami, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program and sharing so much time with us. I really do appreciate it, and hopefully one day we will get to meet.
Thank you, Richard. I look forward to it.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.